Welcome back, folks. Michael Heck's choice for sale 250. But Michael, shouldn't it be come float away as a result of that Tulane study?
Yeah, apparently it should be come float away with me because we're all doomed. But here's the good news. Here's the good news is that all you have to do is just build a great city and people will come. So you don't have to. It's a really, right. Really, there's nothing at risk. It's fine. You just do it. It's fine.
Well, I just had Gordon Dove on from the Coastal Protection Recovery Authority and talking about that Tulane study. And, you know, he made some very interesting observations about some of the things that they relied on for their information and the predictions that there would be 17 to 21 feet of water. And in that case, there are not many places of coastal America that will be above water. So we're going to have a lot of company.
We're going to have a lot of company when we're all living. I guess we'll all be in like Golden, Colorado or something, drinking Coors. And right. Oh, no, wait, it floods there, too. Golly, I don't know. Where is safe? You know, I mean, I guess Indiana. I don't know. But then there are other risks there.
I don't know. We better buy some property in the Appalachians soon, right?
Yeah. You know, no, look, the issue with this is that, and look, and, you know, the folks in the study, they're all backtracking and they're all saying we were misinterpreted and we, you know, we were taken out of context. And but, you know, here's the issue is that it's a bit like, you know, like crying fire in a movie theater, right? You have responsibility for this. I mean, there's a term for this. You'll know this. You're the sheriff. Isn't it first degree manslaughter? Right. When you didn't, quote, intend to do something. But what you did was so clearly going to lead to this negative outcome that you are culpable.
No doubt. And by the way, you are the sophisticated user. You're the writer. This is what you do for a living. You're not thinking about the consequences of what you put on paper.
Well, I think what you're thinking about is getting published and selling your book. That's right. Really what you're thinking about, and that's the game. And you know, the authors of this, you know, said as much when you were quoting the paper. They said, "Oh yeah, you know, we expect to get some hate mail, and we couldn't do this if we weren't tenured." And so there's a full awareness of what's going on, and I think that people have to understand that there is enormous cost to this. And I think, you know, and it was The Lens, and The Lens is not a publication that I necessarily agree with all of the time, but their headline just nailed it. They said, this is a modern day redlining of an entire city. And that is what it is. And unfortunately, you know, the global media, which loves beating up on New Orleans and loves beating up on the American South, dare I say, it's kind of the, you know, the coastal elite media and outlets like The Guardian, which is a bit like the New York Times of England. This is just irresistible to them. This is just salacious clickbait, and they're going to take it and they're going to run with it. And the challenge is that the images that they're putting out there, and they're always like Katrina images, which are absolutely irrelevant today because we have systems in, like the Hurricane Storm Damage Risk Reduction System, which means that if Katrina happened tomorrow, we'd be bone dry. But it's those images that impact investment decisions, convention decisions. NULA probably even impacts people's, you know, at a base level, whether they just want to come and visit. So there is real damage, and the danger is that it leads to a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy because we're with less investment, we have fewer resources, and then we have less ability to invest in adaptation. And then at some point, I guess according to this study, in 125,000 years, you know, they get to say, I told you so.
Yeah. What's interesting, too, and I lost you for a moment, but and I don't know if you addressed it, in this CNN piece with Brianna Castro. It's interesting how she thinks you can just pick people up, move them 30, 40 miles away, and everything is going to be hunky-dory. It's all back to normal. You'll save the culture. None of the historical significance can you bring with you, right? So if we just end up in Talisheek across the lake, you know, it's going to be the new French Quarter.
Yeah, and you know, not only is that, let's just be polite and call that naive, right? I'm not going to say things like ignorant and offensive, even though it is, and utterly unsupported by history, because, you know, we don't have a great history of moving populations, you know, like whether it's the Trail of Tears or we just spent $40 million to move Ile de Jean Charles, right? It doesn't work, and you end up hurting the people that you, quote, were trying to help. But fundamentally, because this is coming out of academia, let me try to phrase this in academic speak. To me, this hits like neo-colonialism or eco-colonialism. It's somebody sitting in an administrative office from afar deciding the fate about a majority-minority community. That's what colonialism was, and please explain to me, like a fourth grader, how this is not the same thing.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. Hopefully this thing dies. You know, it's just
I've been bummed out at just the legs that it's gotten. And the problem is that, again, you know, it fits a narrative of a particular ideological part of Western society. And they love using the Sodom and Gomorrah of New Orleans as a moral punching bag. And one of the reasons why I've pushed back, the mayor has pushed back, is that we can't get this toothpaste back in the tube. Unfortunately, it's out there and we just have to kind of eat it now. But we do want people to know that we are watching and that there are going to be consequences if they don't hold themselves responsible for what they say and how they say it. And simply saying, oh, you know, we were misinterpreted by the media. Come on, Newell, you and I both know, right, that you can't blame the scorpion for stinging. Media is going to do what media is going to do, right?
Right.
So please don't say, oh, yep, CNN took me out of context or The Guardian took me out of context. You know, they are, this is, you know, this is, I don't know if I can say pessimism porn on the radio.
Well, typically when they get in trouble is when they put the press release out, right, that tries to synthesize 600 pages of a study, and they wanted to get some eye popping and, you know, so forth and everything else. And they do themselves a disservice and then it's off and running. All right. Enough said about that. Let's talk about House Bill 1157, this infrastructure bank that's been utilized by other states. And I think the federal government thought about creating one at one time.
Yeah, yeah. Yes,
maybe
this actually relates. This relates to the previous thing. This is a way we're going to have cash for adapting. So really excited that I think the governor is going to sign HB 1157, which establishes a state infrastructure bank. And what is fantastic about this is that it's going to provide loans, and financial assistance to transportation projects, to economic development projects, to big things that need to get built, flood safety projects for our state. It can be funded both by the government, but also the private sector and non-Louisiana entities can invest. So, for example, we're talking to Australia, believe it or not, about them potentially investing some of their retirement fund, which is the second biggest in the world, in this. And then it's going to help with large projects that need gap financing. It can also help rural communities that don't on their own have the financial depth to do these projects. So, yeah, I think we're joining 17 other states that already have this in a tumultuous legislative session. This is something that got out unscathed, and I think it has potential to do a lot of good in a state that has a lot of infrastructure needs.
Absolutely. Let's talk about carbon capture. House Bill 6, House Bill 497, 49, anyway, it's a whole slew of House bills.
Slew of them.
Where do we stand there?
What do you call, like, if a bunch of geese is a gaggle, what do you call a bunch of bad bills? Like, what's that called? It's not a pride. It's like a sorrow. This was a sorrow of bills. And luckily, we've been able to put them out of their misery. Here's the truth. Carbon capture is the linchpin technology for all of the growth in Louisiana. And what it does is it takes natural gas, which has remained stubbornly at $3 despite everything because of fracking, and it allows us to take the carbon, which is produced when we frack the natural gas, and allows us to put it underground so it doesn't go into the environment, so it is less damaging to the environment. And this is then what allows us to power projects from the Hyundai low-carbon steel plant in Ascension to the Meta facility up in the Northeast to the LNG facilities that are using carbon capture to capture the carbon that they're when they're using natural gas to power their facilities. The people who were against carbon capture, it was a strange combination of the far left, who don't like carbon capture because it works, and therefore it extends the life of natural gas in a low-carbon environment, and the far right, who just don't believe in climate change and just don't like, and there's kind of a, a libertarian backland feel that this is going to give the government the ability to take people's land. But everybody in the middle, and this is Republicans and Democrats, this started under Obama, think that this is the perfect bridge technology. So I'm glad that this sorrow of bills have gone away.
Absolutely. Good news, though, on the fortified roof program. It looks like they're going to have some additional funds available.
This is a great one. We have a real affordability crisis in this state. There are a lot of reasons for it. It has to do with our litigation environment. But one of the reasons is that there simply is exposure to weather, to wind and to rain. A fortified roof is much more resistant to wind and rain in terms of how it's constructed and placed on your roof. It therefore is going to reduce insurance costs for individuals. But it can cost money. It can cost, you know, $10,000 or more. And so this new program is $80 million in the Louisiana's Fortified Homes Program, and it'll be grants up to $10,000 per home starting in 2027, and insurers will be required to offer premium discounts for fortified roofs. So the registration opens June 1st, and it closes June 19th. So I encourage everybody who does not have a fortified roof and is thinking about changing out their roof to Google Louisiana Fortified Homes Program and to sign up. It's, you know, this is forward-thinking, progressive adaptation, and it's part of the way we're going to get out of this thing. So I commend this to you, the Louisiana Fortified Homes Program.
Yep. I had an opportunity over the past several weeks to talk to folks about the level of discounts, and they seem to be all over the map. And I had a real estate agent tell me that the folks that are really overpaying for their homeowners seem to be getting deeper discounts because they're overpaying. And, you know, and the market hasn't kind of created an equilibrium yet. So there's a school of thought that we really don't know yet how effective this is going to be. Now, Alabama didn't go through this experience from what I'm told. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think it's worth the investment because there's no doubt that the technology and the way that it's designed will save you your home and your roof, probably, and you know, for certain in many cases. But I don't know. It's still there's still some uncertainty, it seems.
There is.
Even within the real estate industry about how effective this is at the present time. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. We need to clarify this. I think that the more clarity that people have on the percentage discount or the absolute discount that they will get, the more uptake we're going to get and the more fairness we're going to see. And you're right, there is ambiguity now that has to be cleaned up. That notwithstanding, this is absolutely directionally correct. So I'm glad that we're doing it because it's adaptation. But yeah, we do. Basically, I want to know that if I'm paying $10,000 a year now for my P&C insurance, that if I put this fortified roof on, my wind portion is going to go down so that I'm going to knock $2,000 off my annual amount. Then I can do the calculation on do I want to do it. So, yeah, more clarity is critical.
And speaking of adaptation, we are fully recognizing the importance of traffic signal lights and actually doing something about it.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it's wonderful. I discovered this during the Super Bowl when, you know, for a brief and fleeting moment, I as chief, local hero status for filling in potholes with everybody. The mayor recognized that people just want basic things to work. And one of the problems we have with our traffic signals is that there are issues, there's cracks in the casing and the wiring. And so when they get wet, they trip into flash mode. And that's why after a rain, like after what's out there right now, I know that I've got to talk next down at the Four Seasons at an energy conference. That might take me 2.5 hours because of the flashing lights. I'm exaggerating, but basically we've got to go in there. She's going to be assessing 40 intersections. We're going to be assessing how we have to go in there and fix the wiring. And then after we do that, we're going to do in-house repairs, signal synchronization. And then after that, talking to Steve Nelson, who runs DPW, Deputy Mayor, we're going to go towards remote control technology. So, look, we're not going to get there overnight, but here's a fun fact. We're going to hire our first chief traffic engineer that we've had in, I think, like 3 years. So, you know, one small intersection for you and me, one giant leap for New Orleans or something.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about those lights, they're damn expensive. I didn't realize how much those things cost, you know, and you would think that with today's technology that we could find something that's a lot cheaper and easier to maintain. Obviously, maybe y'all need to bring in a company on your innovation hub and figure out, you know, how to design cheaper traffic signal lights.
But here's the answer, Newell. I mean, this is, and I'm saying this actually in some seriousness because it doesn't work everywhere. But I was with Mike Sawaya and Steve Nelson a few weeks ago down at the entrance to the new Goldring Waldenburg Park at where Esplanade meets Elysian Fields. That intersection was a mess before this gorgeous park opened. Now it's kind of insanity. It's kind of like Calcutta, you know, going through that. And, you know, we were talking about it, and we're saying, oh, you know, we could put a signal here because you got Decatur coming in, and you got, you know, basically four or five roads coming in at one place. But then we said, why don't we just do a traffic circle? This is a perfect place for one. People can weave in the traffic. Everybody can find their way. It slows everybody down. And the best thing is it doesn't short out when it gets wet. And so in some cases, right? So I don't know. Maybe it's the European.
I don't know. New Orleanians and traffic circles haven't had a good relationship for a long time.
I don't know. We've got what's Lee Circle called today? Like Baskin Robbins Circle or Harmony Circle or Tivoli Circle or
I don't remember.
You know.
Did they officially name something? Did they ever officially name it?
No, I think it's...
I'm almost embarrassed to ask that, but I'm not sure.
I think it's the circle formerly known as Lee. Hey, this is a great one. You'll appreciate this because this is a generational thing. When we were living in San Francisco, this is back when people had cameras, not phones, and this is right when Prince got out of his contract by changing his name to The Signal. They were doing a two-for-one thing at this photo shop, and the slogan said, "The Reprints, formerly known as Prince."
Love
funny,
it.
Right?
All right,
is it time for a break?
All right, we got to get to a break. 504-260-1870. We can only take Michael Heck in short, you know, segments. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Breaking here, we have a flash flood warning for Orleans Parish and St. Bernard Parish up until 2:56 p.m. this afternoon. And Michael, if we go with your theory of red lights getting wet and going out and blinking, this could be a problem in the very near future.
Yeah, it'll be slow going this afternoon. But hopefully it clears up the rest of the day, and this is just kind of like a typical tropical day, and not we had Memorial Day weekend where it was strangely just like European rain the whole weekend. This is, you know, I can deal with a little hard rain and then it clears up and the birds come out.
Absolutely. We have a special guest that joins us, Michael.
Yeah, a good friend of mine, Chris Abadie. He is the senior vice president at Colliers, and I'm glad he's coming on because he recently wrote an article for City Business that talked about how we've had more than $44 billion in industrial development underway across every parish. And so it's great to have somebody to come on and talk about this because I would suggest that people deal with what I say on a strictly trust but verify basis.
That's why you have these friends, right? To help you.
That's why I have these quote friends. By the way, Chris, what's your Venmo again? I just want to make sure I take care of you now before I forget.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. First, you know, it's always hard to follow the Roastmaster General, Michael Heck, but I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, Chris, at the risk of ruining your reputation, thank you so much for joining us today, Michael. Oh,
thanks.
Heck,
thank you for having me. No, I appreciate it.
Brave man.
So tell folks about Colliers, what you do, and obviously you recently penned a submission for City Business that really runs counter to what a lot of people are thinking and sometimes believing about where we are today.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I mean, at Colliers, we're the third largest market cap commercial real estate company in the world. We made a choice to previously I was with a regional real estate company that's well respected in this market and made the choice to move over to Colliers about 2 years ago. What Colliers saw in our geography was a lot of potential at that time. We saw institutional capital looking back at New Orleans for the first time probably in about 40 years. And so it made sense to bring a large national platform here with the resources that we have available to us from outside the geography to focus on our geography. And it's been very successful over the last 2 years. But specifically what I see today and the reason I penned the article, I was sitting at the Jano Inc. luncheon and actually listening to Michael, which I've attended that luncheon many years in a row. And this was the first year that I really felt like the shift was made where Michael wasn't trying to sell New Orleans anymore. He was talking about the actual real wins we were having, plus the additional potential that could go forward in the future, which was a fundamental shift. And really, really just got a different feeling leaving that meeting that day. And it was the precipice for me writing the article.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, just interrupt for 1 second. We talk a lot internally. And actually, I was talking to the JBC in Jefferson yesterday about this, that we really had to play defense for about a decade. And it's really only over the past year that we've kind of pivoted to moving back on to offense. And so it's interesting you picked that up because that's very much how we feel here at Jano Inc.
So when we look, So where do we stand now? So as your perspective, kind of the state of the state.
Well, the state of the state, I think the state's in a great position. There was some, I think it was Site Selection Magazine came out yesterday and named us the eighth. I forget exactly what the terminology they used was.
The
Prosperity Cup. We landed eighth, second in the South Central region, behind Texas, who was number one overall. But we also, what was important about that is we were ahead of Alabama and we were ahead of Georgia. Georgia was above us, but we were ahead of Alabama and South Carolina, some of these states that you typically hear about, over and over again in economic development circles. And as Secretary Bourgeois has said in open meetings, many times recently, the perception of Louisiana is probably lower in Louisiana than it is outside of Louisiana today. And that bleeds down into the local economic development engines as well. I mean, we have a ton of success that's been going on in our region, and it's not just one parish. I mean, typically we've seen successes, maybe a one-off deal in Plaquemine or in St. Charles or in St. Tammany. Right now, we're having economic development wins in every parish in the region, which is a real testament to a lot of different things, but Jano Inc. is a great example of that. I mean, in St. Charles, we have Southern Energy Renewables, $1.4 billion methanol plant. That's methanol and sustainable aviation fuel facility that's being built. St. Bernard has numerous wins. SSE Steel Fabrication has, 300% revenue growth in the last 2 years. That's an amazing growth for, and also a sign of, you know, growth in terms of what's going to be built, because that's a company that actually fabricates steel. They also have a partnership with Persona AI to develop humanoid robot technology, which is, you know, going to be cutting edge across the world. It could be used everywhere, and it's going to be emanating from here. There's just so many wins across all the different parishes. Plaquemines, what people know about Plaquemines and the Venture Global's plant there, has been in the media a lot, but they may not understand there's a second LNG plant, the Gulfstream LNG terminal, that's in development there as well. You know, St. Tammany has some huge wins, but most notably, if you think about the opportunity to grow businesses in our region, you look at what's happening with Global Star. It was a homegrown business that became, in essence, a worldwide business that is now, being courted by Amazon at an over $11 billion market cap rate. I mean, that's just an astronomical business that was grown here in the New Orleans region.
So, you know, this confluence of all of this, I mean, it's really interesting when you say it's like happening in almost every parish, because I know in my lifetime, and I'm sure, Michael, you would agree, in your lifetime, I've never seen this in the state. I mean, I remember the original oil boom, you know, the couple of iterations of that, where the southern half of the state really was just blowing and going, but I've never seen it like this, where all
this is unprecedented. I mean, just, you know, LED has announced $107 billion of real projects in the past 2 years. That's a magnitude greater than anything we've ever seen, if not more. So it is something that's new and different.
I'd add to that,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Noam.
No, I was just going to say, but we really don't, I guess it's a confluence of a number of different factors and timing, luck, all kinds of different things that are going on. But would that be fair to say that it's not just one or two things?
No, I definitely would agree with that. I mean, you know, what's the old adage that, you know, luck happens when preparation meets opportunity. And the work that we're done, the alignment that we have from the federal, state, and local levels in these different jurisdictions, I think, is a key component, but also the preparation that's been done by GNO Inc., by the local economic development organizations in the different parishes, by LED, all being aligned, communicating effectively together, really has placed us in a position to win for the first time. I mean, one of the what seems like a small example, could be used when you're talking about, like, Textron buying a building in Slidell, Louisiana, from the city of Slidell. What's important about that is when you look at it, they're actually buying that building for back office support. So that's a strong signal to the market that they're going to ramp up their manufacturing, those basic jobs in our community going forward for a long period of time. They're not just leasing where they can expand or contract very quickly. These are going to be white-collar jobs that are there. They're going to use that facility for training. They're going to use it for bringing people for procurement and different back office support staff to supplement what they're doing in the region. Those are strong signals for the future of what we're trying to accomplish.
And a lot of times, you know, folks here, and it's not unique to New Orleans. I mean, this is across the country, anywhere in the world. We have the common man, common Joe, you know, lady has a problem connecting these dots, right? But it builds from, as you talked about, these back office operations where they start hiring there, and then it expands and expands, and they take on more and more, and then before you know it, I mean, you're up 300-500 jobs.
Well, 300-500 jobs, but I mean, if you look at just the LIT facility in St. Bernard Parish, when fully operational, it's going to mean 18,000 direct and indirect jobs to the state of Louisiana, and they're all going to be in the New Orleans region. So, it's a compounding effect, and the basic jobs, the manufacturing jobs, the distribution jobs, the assembly jobs, those are the jobs that create secondary and tertiary jobs. They also create the need for more residential, more retail, and a stronger, more diverse economy over a long period of time.
Yeah. So when we think about this and the impact that it has in the greater New Orleans area in a decade, I mean, obviously, momentum builds more momentum, right? And do you feel like we're in that stage now where people are saying, hey, you know, they've got a lot going on down there. It seems as though they've been able to get over that first two-year trial, you know, when you open a business up here of some of incredible magnitude, that there must be a lot of stuff going on there that makes it easy for businesses to thrive.
Yeah, you know, again, going back to the Global Star example, or Empirical, which is a company on the North Shore that they're an engineering company that focuses on electrical infrastructure, and they're in essence doubling their operations and going to over double their capacity there, but also over double their workforce. You know, there are numerous examples like that in our region where you can grow and scale a business in our markets, but. You know, the future, I'd say that if I had to handicap it from my perspective, and I think Michael probably has a better perspective, but I'd say that we're in the midst of the beginning of a good 10 to 20 year run, at least, in our geography, where we're going to see more fundamental businesses come here, more of, like I said, the manufacturing, the you know, logistics, transportation, distribution. A lot of technology companies, there are some advantages to being here for those as well. And when we talk to outside companies that are looking at our jurisdiction, we're not selling them on Louisiana or New Orleans anymore. They already know. They want to take a strong look at being here. And it's a very different value proposition when we're trying to bring people to this market.
I think if I could just add something here, Newell, that I agree with Chris completely that we're at the beginning of a really good, probably 10-year or more run. I think that the global trends and the macroeconomic trends are so favorable that absent some type of black swan event, you know, even we can't mess it up. We're going to do great in manufacturing, in maritime, in energy, in defense, in aerospace over the next cycle. The real question is, are we taking this time and we have the momentum, have the money, have the energy to make the structural changes so that when we get into a less favorable circumstance, either due to the economy or due to having less political alignment, we backslide not as badly? Because the history of this place is boom and bust. If we can use this current boom to mitigate the future bust, then we're going to have the recipe for long-term growth.
But isn't that, I mean, that kind of gets back to the basics, right, about setting appropriate priorities. And it seems as though we have a long history in this state of we have this innate ability to just squander cash at record levels on stuff that don't return much, you know. And hopefully if we're going to hit this 10-year period, that we get smart, you know, like we have a lot of legacy costs, underfunded pension systems here, big time problem, underfunded educational system, you know, here, big time issue, and other issues as well. And we, you know, and a lot of these are not glitz and glamorous things, but man, they just eat away at government, right?
Yeah, we got to get the basics right. You know, one of the things that we're working on now is bringing sewer and water board underneath DPW. That's a good example of something that's not glamorous, but can be profoundly important going forward.
Absolutely, no doubt. Chris Abbedy, thank you so much for joining us. I think you made it through this process with Michael Heck with your reputation intact, so congratulations on that as well.
Yep, take the W, Chris.
Thanks. No, I appreciate the opportunity.
Have a great weekend, Chris. We'll be right back with Michael Heck's final thoughts. Stay with us. So, folks, just a reminder, flash flood warning, Orleans Parish, St. Bernard Parish, until 2:56 p.m. I understand the city's allowing you to park on the neutral ground or median or that space between the two roadways, whatever you call it, from wherever you come from. So, Michael, congratulations on the 6th annual Innovation Internship Cohort. I had the pleasure of addressing that group, and I was so glad to hear that none quit after my comments. So, I guess.
Well, Newell, thank you for doing that, for not trying your worst. But it's just, it makes me so happy. You know, so much of the work that GNO Inc. does is at the high policy level, like trying to rewrite national homeowners insurance, that when we get to do something as individual and granular as setting up 45 college students at close to 40 local companies and giving them experience, giving them access to social capital that they wouldn't otherwise get, so we have a chance to change their lives while we're growing the economy. It's really exciting. So I love this program. A big shout out to Daphne and Denise on our team who put in a lot of work pulling it together. It's not easy, but most of all our host companies, and I'll just name a few of them that folks might know: Empirical on the North Shore, AOS Interiors, Atmos Energy, CF Industries, Capado, Crescent Power, Gallo Mechanical, Gibbs Construction, Glass Half Full, Landis Construction, MSC Shipping, New Lab, Obatala Sciences, The Port, Renegade, Sewer and Water Board, St. Charles Clean Fuel, Ansardi Group, Cooper Group, Kearney Companies, Vivace, Urban Systems, Riley Foods, Woodward, and there's many more. It's a cross-section of our best companies, and I love the fact that for these young people, they're getting a chance to get on the inside and start their careers, and that for these companies, they're getting a chance to, you know, grow quality workforce.
I was really moved by how many, first off, it's great to have corporate partners, and then y'all have higher level corporate partners like the Walton Family Foundation that are helping fund it. And as I addressed the kids, I said, you know, I never had big cheerleaders like this in my life. I mean, be proud. You got huge cheerleaders. You got the best of the best as it relates to corporations in the greater New Orleans area participating. But what I was really moved by is how many of the young adults, the companies want them back for more than 1 year. And then I was also moved by the company hiring some of these folks and then having them participate with the cohorts that are coming through now, and you're going to see, I think you're going to see more and more and more of this as the program gets older. And there was, you could just see how proud those young adults were that they now are coming back and are going to actually run that program for the company that they did it for, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. I love that. And you could just see, you know, just how proud everyone truly was, the company owners and others that were there. And thank you for the opportunity also for allowing me to interview these companies. I had a number of the folks stop me that evening and thank me for the interview opportunity. They were all very nervous. They all admitted to being nervous, but, you know, but they feel better about it now. So it was a lot of fun. Thank you.
It was great, Noel. Thank you for doing it. It's truly heartwarming stuff. And I agree. I think it's going to only grow going forward.
Absolutely. Michael, thank you again for joining us. I know you got another speech to give probably in about 5 minutes, so you better get on your way because you never know what street lights will be working or what intersection lights.
That's right. Wish me luck as I go down to the land of twinkling lights. It'll be like Christmas. It'll be beautiful.
There you go. Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. Have a great weekend. Got a little tongue-tied there. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission, and we'll talk about the inadvertent release of an OPSO inmate, Dreon Williams. We'll get a Troop NOLA update, and we'll talk about some other issues going on in the criminal justice system as well. And just a reminder that I will be with Craig from Craig's Electrical and Generator Service at the NOLA Local First Storm Prep event at Mike Miley Playground in Metairie from 11 to 2 on Saturday. They're going to have all kinds of trusted local home service pros that are there, plus food trucks, free snowballs, giveaways. Bring the whole family to Mike Miley Playground Saturday, 11 to 2, with Craig's and WWL.